Good morning. It's good to be with you this morning to teach about God's Word. I've wanted to give a lesson here for a long time. Thank the elders for giving me the opportunity and chance. This sermon I gave back home down at Prince Road, the congregation I attend in Southern Illinois, a couple weeks ago. And after that lesson, multiple people came up to me afterwards and said I needed to give this here if I ever had the chance. So if this goes terribly wrong, you can blame them. It's not my fault. One of my favorite aspects of the Church of Christ is our a cappella singing, something I've more recently grown to appreciate more and more. And I would say it's a fair assumption that most of us here that have been attending the Church of Christ for an extended period of time have a favorite song we like to sing. That as soon as you hear that number, you clear your throat, you sit up straight, and you get ready to belt it out. One of my favorite songs comes from a book called The Special Sacred Selections that we use at our church. It's number 531 in that book, and that song is titled Echoes from the Burning Bush. That's what I like to talk about this morning, Echoes from the Burning Bush. Ever since I was little, I've loved this song. Either the way it sounds or the story of the burning bush was always particularly fascinating to me. Whatever the reason, this song has been on my mind the past couple months when I was preparing for this lesson. Thinking about the title of the song is what really got me thinking about the topic of echoes. Particularly, what are the echoes that we can hear from the burning bush? What was the songwriter trying to get across when he was writing this song? Before we really dig into the song lyrics and reading from Exodus chapter 3, I'd like to talk about the scientific phenomenon of echoes. If you ever had the chance to be in the mouth of a cave or on a body of water near some big cliffs, you always want to scream something and hear what comes back. As a kid, it was always mind-blowing to hear that response echoed back to you. But as an adult, it's just something you can use to impress your kids. And while I love to discuss the cool science behind how echoes work, the echoes we're going to talk about this morning are not the type you get by screaming your head off in a cave. Today, we hear and feel spiritual echoes that have reverberated off countless people and events through the history of the Bible and the history that it covers. The unique thing about these spiritual echoes is that they will never die. The echoes you get when talking into a cave or near some cliffs come back once or twice, and they're gone before you say something else. The spiritual echoes we're talking about today will never die. They'll be the same as they were back then in Moses' time, and they'll be the same until Jesus comes again. The themes from the Old Testament all the way back to creation are the same the early church heard in the first century. They're the same echoes maybe your great-grandparents, your grandparents, and your parents heard, and they're the same they taught you. I believe that's one of the main points the songwriter is talking about in this song. The things that happened, the things that said, the things that were done, specifically with the burning bush account, are still relevant today, and we can learn a lot from them. You can fill multiple lessons with the echoes we hear today from the scriptures and the Bible and other secular history sources that tell us about Christianity. But today we're going to stick with the burning bush and see what we can learn about God, how that story can help us in our goal to be more like Jesus. Before we get into the specific echoes we can hear from the burning bush, I want to take a little bit of time to talk about Moses and the importance God placed on him to be the so-called start of these echoes at the burning bush. For sound waves to truly turn into echoes, they need to bounce off something, like a cliff or a cave. Moses was that solid surface. He was that solid foundation that bounced what God said off of him to us today. The first verse of this song illustrates this point in the metaphorical sense. It says, "And 'twas then the Lord did there explain, through his servant should remain all the echoes from the bush on fire." Moses was that solid foundation. He was that rock. He was the start of these echoes, these things that God has to tell us, that carried all the way through his teachings, writings, all the way to us here in the 21st century. One of the greatest speeches ever given in the Bible is in Acts chapter 7, Stephen's speech recounting the history of the Israelites, beginning all the way back to Abraham in Mesopotamia, continuing to the patriarchs and to Joseph, and the eventual settling into the land of Egypt. Then in verse 20, Stephen arrives at Moses in the timeline of Israel's history, and then spends over 50% of his speech talking about Moses and his role as a sounding board from the burning bush. Starting in verse 30 and reading through verse 38 of Acts chapter 7, Stephen says, "Now when 40 years had passed, an angel appeared to him in the wilderness of Mount Sinai, in a flame of fire in a bush. When Moses saw it, he was amazed at the sight. As he drew near to look, there came a voice of the Lord. I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And Moses trembled and did not dare look. Then the Lord said to him, take off your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their groaning, and I have come down to deliver them. And now come, I will send you to Egypt. This Moses, whom they rejected, saying, who made you a ruler and judge? This man, God sent both as ruler and redeemer by the hand of the angel who appeared to him in the bush. This man led them out, performing wonders and signs in Egypt and at the Red Sea and in the wilderness for 40 years. This is the Moses who said to the Israelites, God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brothers. This is the one who in the congregation in the wilderness with the angel who spoke to him Mount Sinai and who with our fathers he received living oracles to give to us. Ruler and Redeemer. God tasked Moses with these two tremendously important tasks for his people, to redeem the people from the hands of the Egyptians and to rule them and redeem them eventually after they got out of the desert. And while Moses was not the perfect ruler or redeemer like Jesus was, he still did what God wanted at the burning bush. Stephen recognized Moses as a key aspect of the echoes that we hear today and that God is continually passing down through his followers. That's why Stephen devotes so much time to Moses in his speech. He was a key part of God's plan and eventually leading to Jesus. The author of Hebrews further expands upon this idea of Moses being at the start of the echoes in Hebrews chapter 3, verse 5. The main point of the first couple of verses in Hebrews 3 is that a greater ruler and redeemer is coming, greater than Moses, and that is Jesus, who is greater than Moses in every way. However, like Stephen mentioned in Acts 7, Moses did have a purpose, and that purpose is explained in verse 5. Hebrews 3, 5, now Moses was faithful in all of God's house as a servant to testify to the things that were to be spoken later. Here, Moses is spoken of as a witness to the things that were to be spoken later, like the beginning of an echo. Moses comes up more times in the New Testament as an example of the witness of the things God had spoken, a direct byproduct of his close relationship with God. He was chosen to be the start of these echoes we are about to get into, an important fact when considering the echoes God has given us through the burning bush. There are three important echoes that I pulled out of the burning bush account that we're going to get into this morning. I used the song as a guide for my thoughts, really trying to understand how the songwriter arrived at his conclusions of what we can learn about Jesus, about us, and about God from the burning bush account. And because we're talking about echoes, I would like to see if we can pick up on these concepts and discern them from later Bible passages about what God was telling Moses. So echo number one, the deliverer echo. One of the main messages God wanted to get across to Moses was his plan for how to deliver the Israelites from slavery in Egypt. In verse 7 of Exodus 3, God says, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings. God, being the all-powerful God he is, had seen how poorly his people were being treated by the Egyptians. He knew what kinds of sufferings were going on, and he was going to provide a way of escape. In verse 8, he tells Moses, I have come down to deliver them out of the land, out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them out of the land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey. God himself would be the one to deliver those lives from safety. Moses was just an instrument of that deliverance. There are two components of the deliverance echo that I think are brought out in the burning bush account if we look hard enough. Those are compassion and follow-through. Many people today like to draw a line between the God of the Old Testament and the God of the New Testament, who is often portrayed as the more loving God. The God of the patriarchs and Moses is often seen as wrathful, jealous, and vengeful, while the New Testament and people like today like to paint God as loving, compassionate, and merciful. However, we know this not to be the case. We will go into greater detail of this later, but the God of the Old Testament is the same as the God of the New Testament. He's the same as the God today. God is just as loving, compassionate, and merciful in the days of the patriarchs. He's just as wrathful, jealous, and vengeful today, an important aspect of anyone trying to understand who God is. Coming back to this idea of a deliverer, I think it's a very important aspect of anyone delivering someone from suffering is to have compassion. You actually have to care about a person before there's any chance of helping them. I think of Luke chapter 10, the story of the Good Samaritan. The Good Samaritan delivered that man most likely from certain death. You showed a great amount of compassion to someone who most people just passed on by. One key aspect of compassion I think God brings out with the burning bush is understanding those sufferings of people around you. Multiple times when talking to Moses, God explains that he's been watching, he's been hearing, he's been listening to the plights of the Israelites. Exodus 3:9. And behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me. I have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them. Compassion is a great thing, a good Christian quality, a good godly quality that every person can get better at. But people often forget that true godly compassion in and of itself comes with an aspect of action. I've came up with four steps, if you will, of compassion and follow-through. Awareness, empathy, intention, and action. A lot of people get the first two right. They're aware of sufferings, they can empathize with people, and maybe even the third, they intend to do something. But often there is no action with true compassion. If you read the rest of Exodus, God does follow through on his promise to Moses. He does take action, and he delivers the people of Israel into the land of Canaan. And like us today, the Israelites made that process harder on themselves than it needed to be. But God followed through on his compassion, and that is the echo of the deliverer we hear today. So how does this apply to us today? We can bring the same knowledge of deliverance to others as God showed to the children of Israel by simply following the two basic principles of deliverer, compassion and follow through. God is the same compassionate God now as he is at the burning bush. We see throughout the entire Bible the compassion God has for those who love him. Psalms 103:13, as a father shows compassion to his children, so the Lord shows compassion to those who fear him. Romans 9:15, this is Paul quoting from Exodus 33. For he says to Moses, I love mercy on whom I have mercy, I love compassion on whom I have compassion. We will talk about Jesus more later, but Jesus is the ultimate example of the follow-through of God's deliverance to his people. Echo number two. The I am echo. As a kid learning about the burning bush account, one of the most confusing things to me is wrapping my head around that I am statement that God makes in verse 14. God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent you, has sent me to you. As an older person who can grasp concepts like this, the I am statement has become one of my favorite descriptors of God that he uses in the Bible. And I believe one of the most important statements God has ever made in getting us to better understand him. In its simplest form, the statement is speaking to God's unchanging and eternal nature, which is why it's often hard for us to grasp it. We have a very hard time thinking about eternal or unshakable things. I came up with three descriptors of this I am statement to give us a more specific view of how God presented himself to Moses. The first being God is self-sufficient. The self-sufficiency that comes with the I am statement is quite a bit different than the same term we use today. Today, if you were to describe someone as self-sufficient, you would say they don't rely on their parents, they can provide for themselves, they have the basic necessities of food, water, and shelter, and they get all that through the work that they do themselves. However, God takes self-sufficiency to a whole new level. God contains in himself every quality and ability without measure. He is complete. He lacks nothing. 2 Corinthians 3:5, not that we are sufficient in ourselves to claim anything as coming from us, but our sufficiency is from God. The Israelites, while slaves in Egypt, had no self-sufficiency. But at the burning bush, God promised to get them established again. It's the same for us today. We hear that same echo from God. We're not sufficient by ourselves, which is why we need the I am, why we need God. Ephesians 2, verse 8, for by grace you have been saved through faith. This is not your own doing, it is the gift of God. Self-existence, another hard concept for us to wrap our minds around. Our world today is all about the continual transition between existence and non-existence, living and dying. But God has always existed and always will. He is the I am. Revelations 1:8 can be used to sum up nicely the I am statement, a passage we're all familiar with. I am the Alpha and the Omega, says the Lord God, who is, who was, who is to come, the Almighty. Psalm 90:2, a psalm attributed to Moses, who knew very well God's aspects and God's character. Psalm 92, before the mountains were born, or you gave birth to the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. We hear this same unchanging echo today. We know God is the same for us and was the same for Moses at the burning bush. continual presence. The last aspect of the I Am statement I'd like to talk about is continual presence of God. Being in the presence of God is something Moses and the children of Israel will become very familiar with their land through the desert, with their journey through the desert. Psalm 139:7, where shall I go from your spirit, or where shall I flee from your presence? For better or worse, there is no escaping the presence of God. We see this continual presence echo again in the New Testament. Whether people yearning to be in the presence of God or Jesus, or in the case of God, God's presence was always around if you were looking for it. Now, how does this I Am statement relate to Moses, and why did God use that specific phrase to describe himself? The first reason I thought of was that the Israelites were about to undergo a period of significant change. Their whole world was about to be thrown upside down. They needed a constant presence to lean on. I think we can all relate to this. I'm always astonished at how fast my life can change. Just when I think everything's going smooth, something happens and my world is turned upside down. Moses, me, and us today can lean on God's unchanging nature when those periods of significant change come around. He is the same God, has the same characteristics as he did for the patriarchs. Verse 2 of the song echoes from the burning bush states, O, the God of saints of old, just the same, so we are told, spoke his message from the fire. This echo of an unchanging God should encompass all the other echoes that Moses was receiving at the burning bush. For the Israelites and their prior knowledge of the patriarchs, this statement was all that they needed to know, was should have been all they needed to know, that the God, their God, was coming to deliver them. I've gotten very familiar with sending out resumes the past couple years. I've probably sent out over a couple hundred, looking for internships and jobs, and I'll send out more when I graduate. It's always kind of sobering to think about that a company will make a decision on you as a person based on one piece of paper. And while that may not only be the only thing they receive from you, it's still a sobering thought. This is the great thing about God. He didn't need to hand Moses his resume or his cover letter. He just needed to say two words to get his point across, and Moses knew who he was. The Israelites didn't need to know God existed. They needed to know he was present and there for them. Three times while speaking to Moses, God describes himself by saying, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. To the Israelite people at this time, the God of the patriarchs would have been well known to them through oral histories and teachings. The God of the patriarchs should have brought great comfort that he was there and going to deliver the Israelites from their captivity. The Israelites grew up on stories of God, the wonderful things he did for their forefathers. This is how Moses knew who God was when he introduced himself as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and why Moses immediately hid his face, because Moses knew the great power that that God had. That was enough of a description for God for Moses to understand who he was dealing with. The God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob is the same God who spoke to Moses, the same God who watches over us today. So how does the I Am echo apply to us today? This is what God was telling Moses, and this is what we are being told today. The things we learn about God from the Old Testament, especially from the burning bush, are just as important as anything we can learn from the New Testament about God. It should give us great comfort to know that God is unchanging in his very nature. The same things he expects from the patriarchs are the same things he expects from us today. What we do with those echoes is up to us. The last echo I think we can pull from the burning bush account is the Jesus echo. Thinking on that last statement of how unchanging God is, what we're supposed to do with these echoes when we hear them, and thinking about the burning bush, what can we learn about Jesus? The last verse of this song states, God sent down his only son just to ransom everyone by the echoes from the fire. That the God of every earthly land would not pick nor choose a man, for his blood will save us from the eternal fire. Here the author of the song makes the claim that from the echoes of the burning bush, we can discern that God has a plan for us, a plan of salvation. I think that's a very correct assumption. And while Jesus is not mentioned by name in Exodus chapter 3, by God or by Moses, I think if we take everything we've already known and learned about the echoes of the burning bush account, if we look at what God was telling us about Moses, we can tell that God would have had a plan all along to deliver us and the Israelites from our sufferings. Thinking back to my first point of deliverance, we see from God's words to Moses that he had great compassion for his people. He knew their suffering and intended to do something about it. God is the same today. He is watching. He knows our suffering. 2 Corinthians 1, 3-4. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our affliction, so that we may be able to comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. God knows the hold that sin can have on us, just like he knew the hold the Egyptians had on the Israelites. And he is the same today as he was then, and that he intended and he did provide a way of escape, a way of deliverance to us from sin. That is the main point we can take away from what God said at the burning bush. When his people are in need, he provides help. God did perform the follow-through of his promise. That follow-through was Jesus, who rescued us from the slavery of sin. We can see Jesus in the burning bush. We can hear the echoes of our compassionate, our loving, our ever-present God from that account in Exodus 3. God revealed so much to Moses in those short 12 verses that we can apply to ourselves today. Jesus was the ultimate follow-through of God's compassion. The burning bush can lead us to Jesus if we are willing to look. The echoes, not just from the burning bush, are everywhere if you are listening. There are many of those out there who have heard those echoes, who have heard about Jesus, but they've never acted on them. There are many people here who have not acted on those echoes. The God who set the roadside bush on fire is the same God that desperately wants all of us to come back into that relationship with him. The echoes are out there if you are listening.